That's the Grua coming to know and love. All right, it's Front End Fire coming at you. And with me, of course, are my esteemed colleagues, TJ Mantol.
Hey, everybody.
And Paige Niedringhaus.
Hello, hello.
So we've got some great news for you this week, of course. In the meantime, let's just do a little bit of housekeeping. So you can head over to the Discord server where you can ask us any questions you want about Front End Fire. And, you know, just be sure to tell your friends. It's a great podcast and you should be listening to it. So without further ado, let's get into some Front End news. That's so much more uplifting. Bang, bang, right in your face. You know, love it. All right, Paige, what do we got?
All right, so this week we have some news about signals. And we've talked about signals before. They're becoming
What are those?
I know. They're becoming fairly popular in a lot of frameworks. They're essentially a way to do state management for in a reactive or declarative way is the way that they kind of define themselves. So a lot of state management libraries get used in a lot of projects, multiple different state management libraries, especially if you're using React. You might have Redux with you. You might have a whole different set of stuff. But Signals is an infrastructure that is becoming more popular. Knockout started in 2010. And now Quick is using it. I think Astro might be using it, RxJS, Angular. A lot of people are starting to adopt it and frameworks are starting to use it. And so there is a new declaration now for putting it into JavaScript and in a more standardized way. Yeah, so there is a whole really, really thorough GitHub write-up that we're going to link to in the show notes. And it is a proposal that is similar to how they got promises into JavaScript, how they've done other TC39 initiatives. And the idea is that it is more focused on frameworks and libraries and not so much on what individual developers would be using, but the frameworks that they would be using. So they have a bunch of framework authors who have already started using or trying to, I guess, define what a standard Signals API might look like. But they mentioned some of them. So Angular is there, Ember, MobX, Preact, RxJS, Solid, Svelte, Vue, Wiz. There's a lot.
Bubble? There's Bubble. Bubble. I don't know what Bubble is.
Yeah.
Starbeam.
Right. There were also some that I'd never heard of before, but they say they're on board, so that's great.
Preact is on there. Preact, yes. Signals.
Preact is on there, Solid's on there, a lot of notable ones are on there as well. So if you read through this whole document, which I have not, but I skimmed through a lot of it, it is at what they would define as stage zero proposal right now, but they're looking for stage one approval from the TC39 working group this month. So hopefully that will come to pass. It seems like they've done a lot of really good thinking around it and that they have a decade's worth of research and people who have been using Signals in some way or another. So it seems like this could probably go pretty well and really help standardize how people are using Signals. So it's pretty interesting, and I hope that it will continue to move forward because that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it would be nice to have this standardized because, like, every one of these frameworks has its own implementation of it. Mm-hmm. And then you're kind of locked into, like, if you model your state in that, then you're kind of locked into that framework. Where this, I would imagine, you know, if you were to go and just have your, I don't know, your state management, like your store, like you have a Redux store or whatever, but you have it modeled in these Signals that are then cross-platform, you can go and take that into any of these standardized Signals-based frameworks. Like, you could use that same store in Solid or Quick or whatever. I think it's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that the authors mentioned is that there seemed to be a lot of similar implementations, not completely the same, but close enough that probably if there was a standard, it would not be a massive pain for these frameworks to adopt it. moving forward.
Also, these things are always going to be faster if they're built into the engine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yes. Running in C++ is going to be faster than some tacked on code in Angular or Bubble, apparently, which is which is a low code framework, by the way. It's
Okay. Yeah,
didn't even know about it.
Yeah, the fastest JavaScript is the JavaScript you don't write.
Right.
The JavaScript that actually runs is the stuff that you run in the VM, like the native method. So if it's native, you know it's going to be, well, it's going to be a heck of a lot faster than if you write it in JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm really excited to see that come out. And I'll have to actually go and talk to Mishko because I remember talking to him about it. And he said that Quick might, because of the way that it does hydration, might have some issues with it. So I'll be interested to see if he's changed his tune on that one. So cool. All righty. TJ, what you got?
I have bun 1.1.
Oh, there's another bun in the oven. Ooh.
There's a super exciting big bun release. This blog post is relatively epic, especially for just a 1.1 release. There's a lot in here. The showcasing feature is Windows support. Bun used to be only for Mac and Linux. It's now available for Windows. And in typical bun fashion, they not only say they're available for Windows, but they're have all these benchmarks and how they're also a million times faster on Windows. So
Just to read through.
When installing a Vite React app, Bun install runs 18 times faster than Yarn and 30 times faster than NPM on Windows. Bun run is 11 times faster than NPM run on Windows. So gotta love some good benchmarks out of the Bun team. The rest of the release notes, there's a bunch of changes not related to Windows as well. So they claim that large projects start 2 times faster. Command line tools like TSC for TypeScript run up to twice as fast than Bun 1.0. They also highlight some of their other tools they've come out with recently, like the Bun Shell, which we've talked about on this show before. That's basically a fully cross-platform shell like Bash for running scripts. So that thing is now a stable part of Bun as well, which is great. There's a big effort towards Node compatibility. They say in their release video that if a package works in Node and doesn't in Bun, that it's a Bun bug, and they encourage people to create issues for that. And probably the most fascinating thing, just they have this under their heading where they're talking about Node compatibility. They said that as part of this release, they found a date incompatibility between Node and Bun, and they traced it down to the fact that Node uses V8 for their backing JavaScript engine, and Bun uses JavaScript Core, and that the difference was actually in the way that the different engines, underlying engines, handle dates. So, and to quote them, "To fix these inconsistencies, we ported the date parser from V8 to Bun. This means that date.parse and new date behave the same way in Bun as it does in Node.js."
Good.
Wow.
Which is crazy. That's kind of awesome that they're willing to go that far. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's also really damn impressive, too.
Yeah.
The only way they're going to get people to use this is if it works exactly the same as Node, but is better.
So, because of this release actually got me to try Bun. I've been meaning to, and it's like, you know what? I like the direction they're heading with this, like the focus on node compatibility and speed. So it's like, I'm going to try this. And in the blog post, they talk about, there's this other quote I'll read, that even if you don't use Bun as a runtime, you can still use Bun install as a package manager. And
Yes.
And so I figured that was the easiest way to start. So I installed Bun. Yeah. I ran it on our biggest app that we use in Blues for a bunch of stuff, and it wasn't the 29 times faster that they claim in their blog post, but it was like twice as fast as our existing Yarn install process. And I think most impressively to me, it worked. Like I was expecting to have to do some configuration or something. I just literally installed Bun, killed my node modules folder, cleaned things up, ran Bun install, and it just worked. And then I ran our Next.js app with Bun, and that also just worked, which is really a testament to what they've been doing for compatibility. And it impressed me. I was expecting to get some cryptic errors and I need a config file or tweak a few things mm-hmm. or something. But no, it just worked. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, you definitely want that, obviously. I mean, if you're going to go up against Node, you don't want any friction going on in that cycle. No.
And, so impressive. Yeah. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, I think I did that early on when trying to like load node modules with Bun, and it was fast.
Yeah.
And then somebody said like, "Oh yeah, well it's fast because it's not actually doing any of the version checks." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I don't know if I'm guessing that they fixed that, because that was one of the things that slows a lot of these package managers down. Is basically there's this bottleneck of like, "Hey, we got to actually go if you have a caret in your version, we have to go check that," you know, and. That actually slows stuff down. So maybe they figured out a way around that. I don't know. But something worth thinking about, because sometimes you want the carrots. Somebody you actually want the carrot to be, you know, like do the carrot thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see anything about it in this blog post. So I guess we will have to see.
Edgy.
Again, like I thought it was impressive that it worked, but I also didn't run through every sort of test and try it out in our CI process and all of that. That would be another extra step of effort. This is something I'd love to hear from our listeners about too. Like, have you jumped
on you using Bun? Sure.
Have you jumped on the Bun bandwagon? Are you using it? Are you liking it? I do think that this is one of the more, I mean, coming after Node is really hard, like you said, Jack. And I think they're at least making a pretty compelling case, which it's going to be interesting to follow.
Yeah, definitely. So many JavaScript VMs out there now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Their video too has incredibly high production value. I don't know who's making all these videos in the JavaScript world and who they're hiring, but it's the audio is amazing. Like I was just
they really it's really good. Like I'm consistently impressed by that.
Yeah,
I don't making know. Geeks look good is not always easy.
Yeah, the actual presenters, Jared, a little bit awkward, but you know what? I mean, developers, it's not this.
Exactly.
It's what you expect. Fine.
Yeah, right. It actually makes it a little more authentic.
Totally.
In a weird way.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Well, my news for this week is around Storybook. So Storybook V8 came out, and it's got experimental support for React server components. That's one of the big take-home messages there. So that's kind of cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So if you're using Storybook inside of your Next.js application, it is super easy to install. There's a one flag switch that you got to turn on that basically wraps your components in suspenses. And so if you have then an async component, like some sort of, I'm going to go off and get a list of blah and on the server and go and render it, it will work. And it's actually kind of cool to see it work. You know, if you've got like some props on it, like, oh, I don't know, page X, right? And then you change the little title, the little parameter down the bottom to go to page 5. Mm-hmm. It actually like shows you page 5's data. And it's like, wow, that's actually really cool.
Very sweet.
Yeah, I did test it out pretty thoroughly, and unfortunately, it doesn't handle server actions, which seems to be the weak point in all of these RSC implementations. So you got Waku, you've got, I think Redwood. Redwood doesn't support server actions, and the only thing currently that supports not just RSCs, but also server actions is currently just still Next.js. Yeah, it's kind of a bummer because, like, I think if you really want, like, the full experience of building components that are just completely reusable, like the idea mm-hmm. being like, oh, I want a tire finder component, you know, if you're an e-commerce company, right?
Yeah.
And you want to be able to just drop it on the page. Like, with RSCs and server actions, you can literally have, like, just put tire finder on your page, you know, and it will, because it's got server actions, then it can both, like, make queries and do the searching all in its lonesome with its own little component, and it'll handle all of that for you automatically. Mm-hmm. If you don't have server actions, you don't get that virtuous, like, Lego-style component lifecycle. It's kind of boring.
So, let me think. Remix said that they're going to support it. We know that Redwood.js wants to support it, but nobody besides Next.js can do the server actions along with the server components.
Yeah. not yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm guessing maybe what's keeping Remix from releasing anything is they actually want to come up with something that is a full parody with Next.
Yeah.
Meaning, you know, server actions and everything else. And I think it's non-trivial is what I'm guessing, because it's taken a while. Taken quite a while to get that done.
Well, power to them.
No kidding. All right. Do we have any more news, extra news this week?
I think that we do.
Cool.
I will start off because mine is very short. But it has officially been announced in a Medium blog post that Angular and Wiz are getting together. They're going
to the framework that nobody actually knows about.
Yes.
Outside of Google.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is going to become not only open source, it is going to become part of Angular. So they're going to become one mega framework. The plan is to steadily open source Wiz features through Angular over the coming years. So they say that they will continue to use the public RFC process that they have used up until this point for Angular. They will get community feedback that will help influence the roadmap, and they will plan accordingly. But it sounds like it's going to stay Angular, not Wangular like we were hoping for. But over time, I guess Wiz will just cease to exist, and all of Wiz's features and functionality will just become part of the Angular package.
Whatever features and functionalities those are, because none of us work at Google.
Right.
Who knows? Right.
Yep. I still find this news wild, but I guess we'll...
Oh, my God.
We'll see.
Like we said last week, it is a very Google move to just either kill off things or stop supporting them without much notice. So the fact that they're going to try and take the best parts of Wiz and put them into Angular doesn't seem that far out of line for what Google typically does with its own stuff.
Well, now that I guess people know about Wiz, I talked with somebody at Google a long time ago about this, and one of the things that was really cool about Wiz was it actually was like a full stack framework, meaning that like it knew how it was really synchronized with the back end, and you know, that was a fully optimized pipe between the back end and the front end, and then it knew how to distribute data from that back end inside the front end. So like various components on the front end could request data. The IO handler would basically kind of congeal those requests. It would pump them through, you know, like a single request all the way to the back end. It was like hyper optimized, and then it would bring that data back and distribute it. It was like really slick. Mm-hmm. And that's why they used it for stuff like Gmail and things like that, because, you know, those components could then basically say, I'm such and such a component. I am interested in this kind of data. And the framework would actually handle transiting that data and making those requests and all that sort of stuff. So I hope that kind of stuff comes through, because I think that would, I mean, and it kind of fits with the Angular thing, which is sort of like, we do everything. Like, mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about anything. You just worry about right. The app. And so if that's the case, then cool. Yeah, I'd like to see that. But that's what I know of Wiz. So there you go. There's my sum total of knowledge about Wiz. And
yeah.
Then I've heard that it's something akin to Quick. Like, it just kind of, there's a lot of similarity there.
So, I've heard that as well. I've also read some stuff on Hacker News where Googlers who have worked with it felt like it was getting a little long in the tooth, which is probably true if it was written and released 10 years ago. So I think it's going to be, I hope it's going to be a good change for everybody, and that they get to work with something a little bit newer. They get to update it to, you know, work with the latest and greatest that we have just going on in the web in general. So it's good luck to them. I really hope that it goes well and that everybody benefits from it.
Well, you know what else was released 10 years ago? It was React. So, you know, there's a little, maybe that's a little long in the tooth too. Could
gosh,
be.
Time flies.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah. Really? Right. Oh my gosh. All right. TJ, you mentioned you might have one.
I do have one. So there was a crazy Linux hack story that went down this week. So not necessarily front-end related, but I think any developer, it's worth taking a few minutes to read through some of the background of this story, because it is wild. The short version of the story is that this utility on Linux called XZ, which is just this utility that compresses large files on Linux, And it is used during the SSH processes that happen on a lot of different Linux distributions. About sometime last week, an engineer at Microsoft that was just working on some Postgres something found this one process as part of his SSH process was taking slightly longer than he expected, and dug in and found this vulnerability in XZ that we've now seen that it allows you to intentionally interfere with SSH operations. It gives a backdoor that allows injection of code during normal SSH operations that gain unauthorized access to the entire system. Like basically full, complete control of your Linux distributions. The crazy part though, because that's like the scale of the hack is one thing, but when people started to dig into how this happened, so there was this maintainer on this project on XZ that created a GitHub account in 2021 and basically established trust became enough so that they became an official maintainer of this project. Like did legitimate work on this utility, did feature patches, whatever, gained access, and seemingly all so that it built up to years later could insert this hack, this malicious hack, and try to slip it into actual Linux distributions that get pushed out.
Oh my god.
Wow.
That's like a full-on like mole.
That's
like
long.
Crime, like, yeah.
The
like most, that's a spy novel type stuff.
And wow. Most write-ups, I think, do think this is actually state-sponsored because
totally.
The degree of sophistication in this is wild. And the planning, to the point that we know that there was other people created accounts to help submit feature requests to this blog. They were trying to overwhelm the maintainer of this by saying, so they would create feature requests and say, hey, you know, why isn't more work being done on this? All to like position
that is
up this
so cool.
All to position up this guy as like the savior who could come in so that he would be granted maintainer rights and have the ability to push out new releases.
Wow.
Oof. Wow. Yeah.
So crazy, but
yeah,
it was discovered. It made it into a few alpha distributions of different Linux distributions, and that's actually how it was found, because this person at Microsoft was testing out with a new build, happened to discover this. So luckily it was found before it made it into any sort of stable release, and now the full community is working on getting to the bottom of this, getting it taken care of everything. So in a way it's kind of it's kind of a success story for open source in a weird way, because even with this level of sophistication, it was still discovered before it ended up in the wild in any significant way. But
okay, I was just going to ask. I mean, you're basically creating a zero-day vulnerability. It's like, oh, we didn't find it. We literally just spent the time to create it.
Exactly.
Wow. And it didn't get out, though.
Just to like alpha build. So there's probably a handful of developers that have it, and that's it. And then, there's a link in the show notes. If you're at all interested in this, I encourage you to go down the rabbit hole, because this is, it's just fascinating. It's such a
it really is.
Story.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that somebody noticed that their SSH was taking longer than normal. And instead of thinking nothing of it, which is probably what most of us, myself included, would do.
My computer's having a bad day.
Dug in. Yeah. That is, that guy deserves a medal, whoever he or she is.
Andres Freund, which I do not know how to pronounce, but yeah, it's basically superhero devotion to, it was one task, the SSHD was taking a half second longer than he expected. And he decided, he just was working with it
who
enough
that
he noticed
that,
yeah, that
right.
he noticed
who
it and decided that? To dig deeper.
What?
He said he was working on performance stuff. So actually paying attention to benchmarks. But I mean, still, like, it's
still,
it's quite the heroic story for somebody to find this.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
impressive.
Intense. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay.
And also scary that they orchestrated this.
But yeah, a multi-year process with likely state sponsor. I mean, it very is almost spy novel-y.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, unless you were somebody who would know, because zero-day vulnerabilities are worth big bucks.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you've got one, then you can basically, and I can imagine maybe creating one.
But I mean, yeah,
it's a heck of a long game there.
Exactly. I mean, how many people are just technically capable of maintaining a very sophisticated Linux compression algorithm package? There can't be that many people out there that are just even technically capable of pulling that off. So it's wild stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some poor Ocean's 14 plot got spoiled.
I feel like I'll see this in a Netflix movie.
There's going to be a 10-part series on this one on Netflix. Unnecessarily.
I law enforcement is involved. There might be a second version of this story where we actually try to trace down the actual
state
origin of this. So,
oh yeah, I would love to see that.
Fascinating to follow.
But you know that now that somebody's like shown that, this is a fantastic idea.
Oh, it's wildly creative.
Unfortunately, and so many. I mean, I talk to open source maintainers all the time, and they. I mean, these folks did nights and weekends and yada, 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 and they're burnt out and yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somebody comes along and they're like, hey, I'm really going to help take this over. You're like, yeah, baby, let's go.
Yep. Especially when you get people to egg on the maintainer to really try to purposely stress them out. It's,
That's brutal. Well, I have a little one, but it doesn't feel anywhere near as cool as that. It's hard to follow that story up. But so we've been doing. The consulting company that I on and off work with has been doing a lot of auditing of React apps recently, and I'll sit in on them because it's just fascinating, and I love to do that sort of stuff. And one of the things we've been seeing a lot of is folks using a combination of Redux and hooks, particularly useEffect, where Redux is really good with kind of setting data and distributing data throughout the application. But if you want to do something like, check to see this page number that I'm getting from the search term that I'm getting from Redux, and then make the search based on that search term. Mm-hmm. Folks are ending up using useEffect to do that. So they have like this combo business logic strewn between their Redux store and their useEffect, which is in the code. And it just gets hairy. Like, I mean, you don't, your business logic is now kind of distributed inside of both your components and also your store. So it's hard to unit test. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. So I talked with actually Mark Erickson about this. He's a lead maintainer on Redux. And he said, wait, we have something for this. This is a thing you can, we've got this in the Redux toolkit. There's this thing called a support for a listener. You can add a listener middleware to your store and then literally just kind of wait. You know, you can literally just put in a thing, a predicate in there that says, hey, if the search term changes, run this code, and then you go off and make the search or whatever. And then it's all contained inside the store. It's very elegant. It's very pretty. And you can kind of move that business logic out of your useEffect. So if you're a Redux fan, really using Redux a lot, but you want that more reactive style where you're just like listening for data changes as opposed to like putting that search every time you change a search query, you also run the search right there kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it can also debounce, which is really cool. So it's definitely something worth looking at if you're a Redux fan, which I know a lot of folks are. Cause I mean, honestly, like Redux is still king of state.
Oh yeah.
If you built a React app between like 2017 and 2021, there's like a 80 to 90% chance you've got a bunch of Redux in there.
Oh heck yeah.
Redux, Redux Saga, Redux
Toolkit.
Oh,
no.
So many Reduxes.
Redux. I'm sorry if you do the Redux Saga thing. It's brutal. All right. Well, cool. Any more news? All right. Well, then let's get into the things we're liking this week. Things making us happy. All right. I think, TJ, you started us off?
I can start us off. Paige did news for it. Doesn't really matter. But what's making me happy this week is open source, actually. And specifically, I had a problem this week where I'm building something with maps and tracking just as part of work stuff. And I needed a quick way to show data on a map. And I did some searching and then I remembered actually Paige wrote a blog post on this like 2 or 3 years ago, something like that. And I was able to just use the repo that she put out there to save me days probably of work to do something. I had to adapt the app a little bit, but it's just really cool to see something like that happen because I know we're in a community of people that puts out blog posts and puts out demos and samples. And sometimes you wonder, is anybody ever going to use this, right? Am I just wasting my time here? And so I just like firsthand accounts of like, oh, actually, I found something and I used it. And it's just really nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just putting that out as encouragement for, yeah, just putting that out there as encouragement for anybody out there that, you know, if you decide to blog about your work, write it up, put out sample code out there, you'd be surprised by who finds it and you can help them out.
Yeah, I think we used to talk about this like every other week was like, if you want to get into this sort of thing, if you want to get your name out there, especially if there's a tough job market, a really good way to do that is do Medium and Dev2 articles. And if you're creating some markdown for yourself anyway to like, oh, how do I go and put Storybook in an XJS application and change this and that and the other thing, and with Tailwind, you know, and you just kind of make notepad sort of thing for yourself so you can do it again later. Just add some paragraphs in there. It says, you know, this and this and this, then post it on a Medium. Bang, you've got yourself an article. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Plus cool. One.
There you go. All right. Paige, what do you got? What's making you happy this week?
I will plus one the open source software since TJ just mentioned it, because I too have been working on upgrading some of the dependencies in our current Next.js app. We're currently running version 13. We're using MDX v2. We're just a little bit behind. So I was hitting an MDX issue where I'm using two different versions of MDX, one that uses Next MDX and then one that uses Next MDX Remote, which is for fetching from CMS systems or other external MDX locations. And I'd upgrade the dependency and half the app would break. And finally, I fell down a GitHub rabbit hole for Next MDX Remote. Other people had had similar issues. They had released a canary version of their library and were letting people try it out before they released it for real to NPM. And I was able to find this GitHub thread, get access from the maintainers to install this canary version, and it fixed my problem. And I have been beating my head on and off against this problem for probably 3+ weeks. Just pick it up, break it, put it back again because I'm so frustrated and can't figure out why it doesn't work. So absolutely plus one to open source stuff like this. It was such a breakthrough yesterday when it finally started to work again for the first time. So
you guys are on a canary build. Nice.
Yeah. So that was awesome. Cool. They think that maybe later this month they'll release it for real. But man, just seeing it compile and not just throw an error when I was testing it was the best feeling. So OSS, good on you. And then the other thing that I'm gonna pick is a table lamp that does daylight. And this has come in.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, this has come in really handy for me in particular as I'm learning to do watercolor painting, because I'm looking at a picture of a flower or whatever I'm trying to paint. And the overhead light that I have is kind of a yellow cast, which is very typical for inside of houses, but it's also not great for color matching. So I found this, I think it's maybe $40, little table lamp. It has four different settings, and you can, you know, increase the brightness as you change it or as you tap it and get it to lighten up. But it works really great. It's very small and compact, which was something that was important to me because I don't want to have to find some place to store this a big lamp. It was very inexpensive for what seems to be a quite expensive investment if you're looking in different places for it, and it's worked really well so far. It's like I said, it's small, it's got four different settings. It really does do a good job of generating what feels like actual daylight, not different, you know, too white or too yellow, and it's been really good so far. So I would definitely encourage you, if you need something like that, or you're doing crafting, or maybe you just need a better lamp at your desk, this might be a good solution for you. And it's called the Daylight Uno Table Lamp. And there seem to be a lot of places that sell it. So check that out.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I've been doing figurine painting. So we're doing like a D&D thing, and you know, there was
that would be perfect for it.
Yeah, these other folks were going to do like Hero Forge, and it was like $45 to get a figurine. I'm like, nah, I'm not paying $45. So I'm going to go paint my. Yeah, I'm just going to go to the store, grab one, paint it. And yeah, you know, having a good light is really important. And $40 is cheap. Like my wife did that, got one for sewing a bunch of years ago.
Yeah.
And it was not $40. It was a lot more than that.
No, I mean, when I first started looking, it seemed like $150, $200 a decent one was pretty standard for a lot of these. And I was like, wow, there's got to be something better.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I wonder if they're using LEDs. Special ball. Yeah, if there's not special bulbs in there, I wonder I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. Do you know if it's LED or what?
I believe that it is. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, speaking of LEDs, so that's actually my pick this week. I have been kind of on a cleanup kick recently, you know, and just going through old stuff. And, you know, you find old projects that literally, like, you haven't even opened these things. And it's like, oh, wow. You know, I bought this packet of LEDs, you know, basically two LED strips with a power converter, and you know it has a bunch of little, you know, a control on it for like making it brighter, making it dimmer. And what I did was I have this cabinet with open faces, and so I just literally just kind of, they have glue backing or like whatever, and just kind of strung them along the bottom of the tops of the cabinets, and so they shine down, and the effect is really nice. And it took, I don't know, you know, maybe 30 minutes with, you know, a drill to kind of drill a few holes here and there through the cabinet, and then you know, just basically laying on your back and stringing up these LED lines, and it turned out really, really nice. And there's you can clip them off at certain segments to make them a certain length. It's great.
How do you have them turning on and off? Did you wire them to like a switch, or are they just always on? Or
so there's the power brick, and then there's an actual little controller that I think has like plus minus and then on and off, but it retains the setting. So if you keep it on, then you can have the brick on a switch and then just turn it on and off, and it would automatically just, you know, return to its original setting. So, you know, cool. You can choose whatever that default would be.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that.
Nice effect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll put a picture of it over in Front End Fire.
That's super cool. I was watching a home improvement show earlier this week, one of the HGTV ones, and they had added under cabinet lighting, I think like along the kickboard underneath the cabinets that would be down by the ground in a kitchen. And it was so cool looking. And I bet they did something very similar to that. So that's really neat.
Definitely encourage you to get the crumbs off the floor too, because they're going to show up like nobody's business if it's down there.
They're eliminated. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Actually, another one I was thinking about, like when I have some disposable income back again, hopefully when the course is going, is a movie poster, like a movie light box.
Oh yeah.
So cool. I'm going to do one of those, and I'll post on the Discord how that's going. But I it's really cool. You can go and pick up posters that you have to have the special two-sided posters, but for like, depending on the movie, you know, its popularity, I guess, like, you know, between $11 and $150 on Amazon. Like the $150 are like the crazy older ones that like are super hard to get, but like, you know, I can get Annihilation, and that's like $11. You know, and it'd be really nice to just have like a set of posters, and then just kind of like, you know, it's up on the wall, and just kind of change them out every once in a while for whatever the mood is.
Yeah, I like that.
So I quite literally have, I went and found it at LED, a strip of LED lights that I've never used because I had this idea that I was going to put it in the background of my video.
That's right back there, man. I'm looking at it right now.
Well, but I didn't know what to do with it, so it's still in the box, and maybe you'll inspire me to take it out of the box and put it somewhere, maybe in some cabinets, maybe behind me. I don't know, but I need to get to it. So
yeah, the cabinet look is at least real
get the
good.
Box out.
Yeah, it saved me a lot of work because I knew I was either going to have to put doors on the cabinets because they look janky, you know, or do something. And the or something came up, and then I have all these Lego kit cars and things, and I put them in there, and it's like I designed it. I totally didn't design it, but it looks like I designed it. But I'm telling you, like looking at what you got back there with your like Mario Party, you know, cup and all that, or your Mario Kart cup and all that, it looks It would be cool. I think it would look really nice. And behind you, it look really nice.
Yeah. I just got to find a way where to put it. Like, that's, it's really hard. I don't know if I just put it, like, on top of the bookshelves, like, pointing up, or I don't know what.
I think you put it on each row, pointing down.
Yeah. But see,
that's what I have, like, to play around like, with
it. Yeah. Am I going to cut up the lights? I don't know. This is why it stalled previously. So that's why I'm wondering. This is why I'm wondering why, if I could just find a cabinet to put it in, and then at least it's not sitting around doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would normally say this, but because y'all are IoT folks, there are some options on this thing. Like, there's a whole like LED wiring subculture kind of thing, and I'll send along some links. Yeah, cool. Because yeah, soldering iron back there, you can make this happen, man.
I do.
That's true.
I'm not very good with it, but I have.
Well, okay. There you go.
You only get better by practicing, TJ.
How do you get to Carnegie Hall, TJ? Practice, practice, practice. All right. Well, this has been a fun episode. Got a lot of great news, some good stuff on the What We're Loving This Week front, and we will see you next week. Be sure to jump on our Discord, Front End Fire Discord, and or the Blue Collar Coder Discord in the Front End Fire channel, and have a chat with us. We're just real friendly, easygoing folks, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Yeah. See you next week.
Yeah, or come to see a picture of Jack's lights. Yeah,
yours.
See that.
We're going to make this happen, TJ.
Okay, yeah. To hold me accountable.
Accountability. Yes, but exactly. We're an accountability team now.
Weekly segment on this.
Updates.
I love it.
See you
I love it. All right, bye.
Yeah.